This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Superconnector. Stop networking and start building business relationships that matter. Written by Scott Gerber and Ryan Paul. Read by Chris Kipiniak. This program contains a PDF of supplemental material. Foreword by Keith Ferrazzi. When I first published Never Eat Alone in 2005, having a Palm Pilot and a BlackBerry was state-of-the-art. Social media was a choice between Facebook or MySpace, and networking was how you got ahead. It's not what you know, it's who you know, was a popular corporate mantra, leading countless thirsty junior executives to brush up on their conversational skills or attend a seminar to learn the tricks to successful networking. I was lucky, though. I had the best networking coach around, my father, Pete. Like most immigrant parents, he raised me to show up early, learn everything I could, work hard, and be of service. Through him, I learned that it mattered not how many people you knew, but how many people you helped, because those were the people who would be there for you when you needed help. I wrote Never Eat Alone because I saw that the way people networked was all wrong. The standard approach was transactional and self-interested, with the guiding principle being, what can this person do for me? There was no sincerity, no authenticity, just a desire to grab as many business cards as possible in the hopes that one day, one of them would produce a return. Coming from an Italian family, this made no sense to me. Community is a driving force in Italian culture, and you can't create a community if everyone is just looking out for themselves. You need to look out for each other, develop opportunities for others, and find ways to make sure you all succeed. As the saying goes, a rising tide lifts all boats. Of course, knowing what to do and knowing how to do it are rarely the same thing. Telling people, be generous, be sincere, be authentic, can sound more like put yourself out there and open yourself up to ridicule and humiliation. And no one wants that. It was always easier to have a game face, but game face is just a euphemism for mask. I wanted to introduce the idea of leading with generosity, of showing how what you bring to the table can benefit others, and how creating a network means reaching out and being generous, not just with your immediate circle of friends, but with acquaintances who may not share your interests, but have complementary skills and expertise. By taking care of the people within your sphere of influence, they, in turn, will take care of you. The development of social networks over the past decade has made forming those initial connections easier. A click of a button and you're officially someone's follower. Two clicks and you're friends. It's the 21st century version of collecting business cards. But even with all this immediate connectivity to almost anyone, the mechanics of forming those relationships hasn't changed. We still want to know each other as individuals, not just as job titles. We still want to work with people we like and who have our best interests in mind. And mostly, we want to connect and partner with people with an interest in not only their own success, but the success of others as well. Being a superconnector isn't a talent or a gift. It's having the awareness to realize that we all want the same things, even if we take different paths. It's reaching out to someone else and saying, I can help you get there. It's having the generosity of spirit that would never reduce success to a zero-sum game. Seeing people like Scott and Ryan take my words to heart and expand on them by developing their own approaches to connecting instead of networking has been gratifying. While technology is constantly changing and improving to help us become more connected with others, it can't improve upon one person's offer of support and generosity to another. Books like this remind us that it will always be the human connection to helping each other that matters most. Preface. Superconnections. This is a book about building relationships. Relationships that exist for mutual benefit. Relationships through which something wonderful can happen. It is a book about community and community building and the very real need for connection. It is a book for anyone looking to enhance his or her relationship-making ability, both professionally and personally. Relationship building is something that we take very seriously. Our entire professional lives have been based on helping business owners, entrepreneurs, and professionals meaningfully connect and build value with one another. We pride ourselves on our expertise in this area, and over the years, we have developed a strong methodology for how to go about building, fostering, nurturing, developing, and maintaining relationships. We want to help you understand the power of connection, too. As the world gets noisier and busier, connecting has never been more important. The next generation of success via social capital will be determined by those who have walled off access to the people who matter. We want to help you become the sort of person who has that kind of access. To be a connector. A super connector. Super connectors are a new category of tradespeople born out of the social media era. They are highly valuable community builders who make things happen through their keen understanding and utilization of social capital. That is, the people you meet and the standing you have with them. We believe that social capital is the most important currency in the world. People, not money, are your most important assets. Great things in business happen when the right people come together. Super connectors are people who just seem to know everyone, says Keith Ferrazzi, the founder of Ferrazzi Greenlight, a research and consulting firm who actually coined the term super connector in his landmark book, Never Eat Alone. Ferrazzi says these people appreciate the importance of weak ties as well as strong relationships. To expand your range of interests and expertise, Ferrazzi explains, you need to diversify your network and incorporate people with whom you have less in common, but whose interests are complementary. And superconnectors connect with a whole spectrum of people. Superconnectors are information brokers. Their power comes from what they know just as much as whom they know. Obviously, the two are not mutually exclusive. Superconnectors are constantly learning and constantly connecting. They know that the more right people you meet, the more you learn, and vice versa. This is also one of the reasons people are attracted to this type of connector. In a noisy world, that's a 1-2 punch. Superconnectors can do what they do because they understand the essence of community building. That is, the process of connecting people for mutual gain. They are patient, knowing that long-term gains trump short-term ones. The rewards they reap might not be evident for years to come, but that's not an issue. Superconnectors play the long game. They have patience and dedication. In Aesop parlance, they would be the tortoise. To that end, superconnectors aren't born. You can learn to be a superconnector, which is exactly what this book is about. You might think that superconnectors are extroverted and love to be the life of the party, but not always. In fact, some of the best connectors we know are serious introverts who became superconnectors in spite of, or perhaps because of, their introversion. They get lost at big events. They shine in smaller one-on-one interactions. They create opportunities to connect with people who fit their unique style of relationship building. But superconnectors don't meet others for the sake of amassing a museum-worthy collection of business cards. Superconnectors care about people, and they love connecting people who should be connected. They understand the power of relationship building, and they purposefully bring people or groups together with the intention to create mutual value. They are emotionally intelligent and empathetic. They understand how to uncover the needs and desires of those they aim to connect, even if those people don't clearly know what they're looking for themselves. True relationship building is a master craft that takes tremendous time, energy, and thought. A maxim: anybody can call themselves a connector. Only others can call you a super connector. We all love an overnight success story, but behind every overnight success story that's endured, you'll see lots of internal work, a lot of thinking and preparation that no one knows about, says author Shane Snow, the co-founder of Contently. The difference between a one-hit wonder and someone who goes on to have a career is that the latter has done more work that no one has seen. It's not just luck that they hit the charts. There's a lot of planning and recognition. It's the same thing, whether it's making music or being a connector. The best ones have done the prep work. In an age when we are all desperate for instant gratification, and many people do still really want to believe that there is a 5-minute abs formula for building a professional network, not to mention ab building, it's easy for unoriginal posers to continue to regurgitate jargon-laden, one-size-fits-all tidbits to advance their own self-interest. This false narrative has continued to push the notion that being connected and being a connector are the same thing to millions of people. Nothing could be further from the truth. And in the long run, only one of those mindsets will offer any real pathway to relationship-building success. Guess which one that is? That's right, the connector. Introduction. Why you should listen to anything we have to say. Because the two of us have lived exactly what we are preaching. We were introduced in 2010 through a mutual friend, Dan Chaubel, who's made a big name for himself as an expert on millennials and the workplace. We each knew Chaubel through our own individual channels. He is a big league connector and insisted we meet. Obviously, he had no idea what the exact outcome would be, but he definitely suspected something good would come of it. He was right. Both of our lives changed with that one introduction. After graduating from Penn State in 2006, Ryan had taken the first job he could get at a top pharmaceutical company in his home state of New Jersey, where there are as many pharma companies as there are strip malls. He sat down at a cubicle every day, collected a reasonable paycheck from a wet-behind-the-ears college grad, but was miserable. He wasn't alone. His lifelong friend and freshman year roommate, Ryan Healy, people referred to them as the Ryans, was sitting in a cubicle down in Washington, D.C., feeling equally demoralized by his first job. They complained to each other often about how unhappy they were. Eventually, the Ryans decided to do something about it. They realized that if they were going to be in jobs that were financially stable but soul-deadening, they might as well use that stability to moonlight our own destinies, as Ryan Paul puts it. Blogging was just becoming trendy, especially among Gen X and baby boomer recruiters, hiring managers, and HR professionals, who were just starting to add Generation Y and millennials, like the Ryans, to their teams. But they were having difficulty working with this new breed of worker, and that angst found its way onto their blogs. These young upstarts were narcissistic, entitled, disloyal. Newspapers and magazine articles, along with books like Generation Me, were dedicated to lambasting the group. But nobody from our generation was speaking up, says Ryan. The Ryans decided to create a blog, Employee Evolution, to be that voice. They blogged about the clash of generations in the workforce from their perspective, defended their peers, and attempted to debunk the stereotypes associated with us. People started to take notice. Both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times ran features on them. Morley Safer anchored a segment on 60 Minutes. And a funny thing happened. They discovered that they weren't alone in their dissatisfaction with the status quo of the working world. Nor were they the only ones who resented the generational stereotypes. They met with and supported a number of bloggers, many of whom became good friends, who shared their beliefs. one of whom was a woman named Penelope Trunk. Trunk, a Gen Xer, had written a book called Brazen Careerist, The New Rules for Success, a career guide for Gen Y. It became so popular that it spawned a column in the Boston Globe and a controversial career blog that's still around today. But she was looking to do something bigger with the brand. That's where the Ryans came on the scene. Trunk didn't know what she wanted to do next with her brand, but she knew she wanted it to be a startup and that she didn't want to do it alone. She found Employee Evolution through seeing them comment frequently on her blog. They were huge fans. She wanted the Ryans to be her partners in her next venture. Together, they created Brazen Careerist 2.0, an online community for young professionals entering the workforce to share their challenges and frustrations and offer each other support. The bloggers they had befriended earlier, along with the ones they met through Employee Evolution, became their anchors. More about anchors later. In 2009, Mashable had dubbed their little startup one of the top social networking destinations for Gen Y. Flash forward to 2010. The Ryans were now living in Madison, Wisconsin, where Trunk lived with her family. Because when you're in your early 20s and your partner has two kids, a husband, and a home, you go where she tells you to. They had raised more than $1 million in funding, and they brought hundreds of thousands of people onto the Brazen Careerist platform. But they weren't making any money. As Ryan puts it, "We had to make a big change, or, as startup folk like to call it when you have to go back to the drawing board, a pivot." They had to bring in new leadership. One of their lead investors and a seasoned CEO who believed in them stepped in. Brazen Careerist was beginning to take new shape as a software-as-a-service platform, providing speed networking opportunities helping recruiters and job seekers, students and alumni at universities, and any other A-B combination you can think of connect online. It was a brazen move inspired by the phenomenon of chat roulette. Yes, the one with all the creepy naked people. And something unexpected. The company started making money. They brought on big-name clients, and the company was reborn as a SaaS technology play, Brazen Technologies. As thrilled as Ryan was to see the company he co-founded start to see some success, he also started feeling like his time at Brazen was coming to an end. He was, and still is, a community builder at heart, and he felt like he couldn't contribute the best parts of himself to the team. One afternoon, he sat on a beach in Chatham, Massachusetts, with his friend Dan Chaubel. That's when his life changed. Chaubel suggested that he connect with an entrepreneur named Scott Gerber, who was working on something that was right up his alley. Scott had studied film at New York University, and while he was still in college, he became a very successful producer. He knew nothing about business. He relied on Google to help him decipher terms like P&L. His family couldn't help him. They weren't entrepreneurs or moguls. He had no formal mentors or advisors to counsel him on what he was doing right or wrong. He relied on instinct, salesmanship, wagon loads of naivete, and his type A chutzpah. He created a viable business and managed to make a lot of money his junior year, which he promptly lost a year later, largely because he was a rookie, made stupid mistakes, and had no network around him to help him deal with the business challenges he faced. At that moment, he made himself a promise. He never wanted another entrepreneur to experience the same feelings of loneliness or lack of support that he had. He never wanted another young business person to go blindly without a network or any other connections, as he had. He vowed that if he ever found financial success, he would create a group where like-minded young entrepreneurs could help each other solve the types of challenges he faced. After graduation in 2005, to the chagrin of his real job-touting family, he took the last $700 to his name and built another company called Sizzle It, which produced promotional videos or sizzle reels, for PR and marketing firms. He learned from past mistakes, and it did quite well. It generated substantial profits and had a who's who client roster of many of the world's largest brands and advertising agencies. 2 years later, he made good on his promise, and the first iteration of the Young Entrepreneur Council, commonly known today as YEC, was born. In 2010, after the recession hit, Scott began sharing his story with universities and youth entrepreneurship groups. He felt students could relate to him as a peer and find value and inspiration in his journey. After all, he was only a few years older than the students he was speaking to. Then the media came a-knockin', which caught the attention of dozens of young entrepreneurs from around the country. The message resonated with them, and many would end up reaching out to him and joining him as he continued to speak with students and youth groups. As the press interest around youth entrepreneurship and the Young Entrepreneur Council hit fever pitch, Scott broadened the concept yet again. He began asking up-and-coming entrepreneurs from around the country to send him their business questions and challenges. He would then funnel them to his newly assembled group of successful entrepreneurs, who would answer those questions. He then partnered with several of the media outlets who had been covering his efforts, such as Inc. Magazine, Time, and the Wall Street Journal, and published his group's collective responses in their publications. As more questions and more press outlets wanted to take part, Scott continued reaching out to other successful entrepreneurs his age to join his group. They, in turn, introduced him to people in their networks. One of them was named Dan Shawbell. After a month's worth of back and forth, Ryan and Scott finally got on the phone. We clicked big time. That's when things got serious. I remember thinking, wow, my business advice is being shared alongside advice from Alexis Ohanian, the co-founder of Reddit, Ryan recalls. There had to be something more we could do with this group. Ryan started flying into Manhattan from Madison regularly, and we'd walk around the city all day long, talking about building the next great entrepreneurial organization. We ate more Panera Bread than we could handle, but burned off the carbs just as quickly with every step we took while formulating our vision. Together, we realized that it was possible to do both good and well at the same time. First and foremost, we wanted to help other people with their businesses, but we also wanted to be able to create enough value for ourselves to ensure that the Young Entrepreneur Council wouldn't become just another one of Startup Land's failed meetup groups due to lack of care and management. It wasn't easy. We both worried. Would people want what we offered in a formal manner? Would they be willing to pay for it? The answer, we discovered, was yes. We didn't realize how much value we'd been creating or how valuable we were to other people, but more on that later. Slowly, what began as an organic movement turned into a legitimate, sustainable business. Eventually, we both left the businesses we started to step into YEC full-time and grew it into the thriving organization that it is today. By 2012, YEC had become a huge resource for entrepreneurs and media alike. Today, YEC is composed of more than 1,700 entrepreneurs in North America 40 years old and under, whose companies make more than $1 million annually in revenue. The group has led to thousands of meaningful business connections, and the business generates several million dollars in revenue annually. Our success with YEC even inspired the creation of other membership groups for professionals in different business sectors through partnerships with organizations like Forbes and Men's Health. These communities sit alongside YEC now in our new umbrella company, the Community Company, which works with media enterprises, global brands, and celebrities to build professional organizations that help our partners create greater engagement and customer affinity. And we owe it all to an introduction made by a third party who connected two guys living in two separate parts of the country who shared very similar ideas and ideals. Thanks to our mutual friend Dan, who had the foresight to connect two guys, two connectors who think and act like connectors, we were able to create something amazing. We took the ball Dan tossed our way and ran with it. We used our methodology to build social capital and, eventually, saw great financial success. Let's be clear. None of this would have happened if not for a single connection from our dear friend Dan Chaubel, the super connector who saw an opportunity for two people with different strengths to create and make something magical happen. "I had a gut feeling," Dan later told us. "In my head, I'm thinking, the two personalities are very different, but they are, in effect, trying to do the same thing." His gut was right. If we hadn't teamed up, YEC would never have made the transition from a small idea to a movement and then led to a successful business. That's the power of a good connection. And the power of a super connector. Again, a whole lot of value can be created with just one single connection with the right context, purpose, and reasoning. If we didn't trust Dan or Dan's judgment, or if we had chosen not to listen to him, we might have never met. Or we might have met and not taken the relationship any further. But we both recognized that this was a connection worth diving into. As a result, we built a business that has changed both of our lives for the better. But we weren't the only ones whose lives changed. Dan's access, reach, and clout increased exponentially as well. His cachet grew along with his opportunities. He increased his direct and indirect access to media outlets and other entrepreneurs in YEC who could help him in his professional endeavors. He benefited from YEC just by association. That's the kind of serendipitous good karma that more often than not comes back to a super connector because of their goodwill and thoughtfulness in connecting others. Chapter 1. The End of Networking. On the one hand, meeting people is easier today than ever before. Thanks to social media, Facebook, Twitter, and a never-ending number of new platforms arising daily, it's simple to reach out to just about anyone in the world. You virtually poke them, they poke back, and suddenly they're one of your 500 BFFs. Awesome! As it became easier to connect with other people, we forgot what connection really meant. We conflated the two. Connect and connection are not the same thing. Most people strive to connect and repeat instead of connection and repeat. They're interested in breadth over substance. We are the exact opposite. There's a big difference between the kind of connecting social media has taught us to do and the kind we want you to follow. See, here's the reality. Networking, as we know it, as we have been taught it, is dead. Or, at the very least, it's on life support with little chance for recovery. In fact, we'd like to abolish the word altogether and substitute connecting for networking. Who killed it? Well, in a way, we all played a role. You, us, your Aunt Helen, and just about anyone else vying to get ahead in the world. Our more is more, networking for networking's sake approach to social media, conference attendance, and yes, even daily human interaction, has bastardized this once reliable pillar of business success into a mere mirage. Why didn't anyone tell you that networking kicked the bucket? Because there are entire industries, software companies, and consultants generating billions of dollars annually by continuing to give credence to this outdated, gluttonous approach to relationship building. The MLM industry, that's multi-level marketing, is a perfect example. Hundreds of companies out there have told people they should simply meet, monetize, and repeat. Never mind that these practices have destroyed lives, financial futures, and friendships. And we let them. Each one of us is at fault. Our lack of awareness and unwillingness to change our behaviors are what led us here. We just keep following the same stale, antiquated networking techniques because we're told they will work. Rather than learning something new, we default to our familiar habits. But they don't work. An ever-growing number of gurus, conference organizers, and MLM hucksters are feeding us antiquated tips, tricks, and hacks about how to best go about building valuable relationships. By their definition, that's code for sales prospects. Except it doesn't build relationships. Not even a little bit. So why do we let ourselves continue down this path of networking for networking's sake and gross overuse of social media? Because we're addicts. About 5 to 10% of all internet users are screen junkies. A December 2014 study in the journal Cyberpsychology, Behavior, and Social Networking found that 6% of the world's population is addicted to the internet. With about 7 billion people on the planet, that's roughly 420 million people who experience a huge rush when they log on, similar to the way drug addicts and alcoholics feel when they get a fix. So we are, quite literally, hooked on this stuff. Back in the good old days, say the beginning of the 21st century, networking was pretty standard. You went to events, you handed out business cards, and you pressed a button on LinkedIn, and boom, you were connected. Mission accomplished. Never mind that you rarely took the relationship offline. Sure, you and your new BFFs may have emailed on occasion or placed each other on one another's generic mailing lists, but the relationship didn't progress much beyond that. Still, you dutifully continued on this path, amassing contact after contact. You were told that this was the right thing to do. In order to climb the corporate ladder or build business success, you have to schmooze with as many people as possible. You never know when that one right person might come along who can help advance your career or take your business to the next rung. On one level, this is correct. You don't know whom you might meet and how they might rock your universe. But there's a better way to find them besides trolling gigantic auditoriums at, say, ye old trade show. Rather than hopping around like a moleskin pouch in search of a business card, you're better off asking yourself, is this really the best use of my time? Is this the smartest way I can achieve the outcome I desire? Let us help you out here. No, it is not. There's a much better way to build meaningful, mutually beneficial relationships that yield real results. Indeed, somewhere along the line, we lost sight of the actual purpose of networking. To build a mutually beneficial relationship with another person and maintain that relationship for the long term. Stylistically, and the core thinking of the MLM industry, the mantras and blog fodder differ from speech to clickbait headline blog post. But in essence, the typical pitch reads something like this. If you focus on building fans and followers on social media, regularly share content using inbound marketing techniques, and attend networking events, you will be able to amass a giant network from which to extract value and win big at business. Never mind the time and care it takes to get to know the actual people you meet. You can just growth hack. Yes, that's a real buzzword or buzzverb. Your way to Rolodex success. It's exhausting just reading it. Here's the truth. The number of contacts and followers you have online does not trump real relationships. Being virtually or offline connected is not in itself valuable. Social capital cannot be measured in likes and shares. Instead, you have to acquire social capital and build trust and meaningful relationships through the right conversations, actions, and value exchanges with the right people. By value exchange, we mean information, education, mentorship, a resource, or a connection. Literally, a place where value is exchanged. Instead of asking, how do I solve this business challenge? A superconnector thinks, who do I know who can help me solve this business challenge or directly connect me with the right people? A superconnector knows how to use social capital to solve business challenges with the same ease that a sommelier knows which wine to order with your steamed lobster. FYI, a Chardonnay or nice white Burgundy. We have spent hundreds of hours thinking about this and have created a methodical, systematic way, which is exactly what we will teach you to do in this book. Mind you, we are not telling you to eradicate every single one of your old habits. We don't want you to veto all conferences or never post on Facebook again. Conferences can be wonderful tools. We've met a lot of amazing people at them. But you do need to rethink every aspect of your attendance, including your purpose and participation. We're not suggesting you never use social media or attend events ever again, but we are saying it's important to be smarter and more strategic about the things you do. You'll still be using the same tools and real estate you've always used. You'll just use them in different ways for a different reason. Technology, for example, has enormous benefits. But technology should be used as a tool to engage, enhance, convene, and understand how to read people's motives, interests, and desires. Rather than relying on it exclusively, we want to teach you the right way to use platforms. We are not about purging the tools that have driven new business relationships over the past decade, but instead, committed to learning how to be more strategic and make the best use of your time when others are simply creating more noise. This new skill set is something you'll need in the professional world. Chapter 2. How to think like a superconnector, not a networker. Here's the thing. Since we first met in 2010, the world has gotten a billion times busier and noisier. There is so much social media, and there are so many conferences and so many opportunities for meeting, which is why being a superconnector is more important than ever. As social media continues to proliferate in the business and entrepreneurial worlds, and society is overwhelmed by the overabundance of noise versus signal, that is, important, meaningful information, connections, value exchanges, knowledge sharing, it's clear that the right access and social capital will exponentially increase in value. And that those who own these silos of walled-off access to that social capital will be exponentially more valuable in the eyes of others than those who don't. Harnessing the power of the right connections will be ever more vital in the years to come. To be prepared for this new reality is to better understand the convergence of business and community, how a new way of thinking is required to successfully navigate existing real-world channels and online platforms, what skill sets are needed in order to thrive in the social capital generation, and why it's time we abandon our gluttonous mentality of networking for networking's sake in favor of a more curated, thoughtfully crafted approach. It's happening already. Decision makers and tastemakers who can actually move your business or career forward are leaving oversaturated networking channels in droves, looking to more curated, invitation-only experiences and communities where they can maximize their value and protect their time. How can you reach them? And, better yet, join forces with them and see bigger wins. And reach them you must. Because like it or not, those folks who adapt to our changing times and master this relationship-building philosophy will become uniquely positioned to build value for themselves and others, and will join the ranks of a new, sought-after force of elite professionals. We want to teach you to do what we do. Not necessarily to become a world leader or captain of industry, but to become the center of influence in whatever circle you want to be in. The goal is to get you to think, speak, act, and win like a connector. A super connector. Connectors don't see the world the same way the rest of the world does. We speak differently. We make an impression differently. We use technology differently. And we control our surroundings differently. There is a big difference between networking and connecting. Let's look at entrepreneur and former Arena League football player Lewis Howes, who is also the author of the New York Times bestseller, The School of Greatness, A Real World Guide to Living Bigger, Loving Deeper, and Leaving a Legacy. He is also the host of a highly successful podcast, The School of Greatness. Howes refuses to network. He simply won't do it. "I just connect and add value," he says. Networking is more transactional. It's more focused on getting a result for yourself, as opposed to thinking of how can you be of service to the other person in front of you that you meet, and genuinely have interest in their needs as opposed to your needs. Networking has selfish implications. You want something out of someone else, so you go around making strategic connections. I think about it as someone who's trying to build a web of relationships that serve a professional goal and expand that web as efficiently as possible and leverage it as efficiently as possible, which is why I feel a little dirty even defining it, says Wharton professor Adam Grant, the best-selling author of Give and Take, Why Helping Others Drives Our Success. A connector isn't in it for anything above the pleasure he or she gets from introducing two people to each other who might benefit from knowing one another. So it's not just, "Hey, I think you two should meet because one of you can help the other," says Grant. It's, "I think you two should meet because you share a common goal. It would be valuable to both of you to know each other." Keith Ferrazzi looks at it similarly. The words networking and networker can suggest a self-serving purpose, that you're in it to see what you can get out of others. That never works, he says. A connector is reaching out to form an alliance with the other person, offering to be of service first and foremost. Networkers like to work the room and collect cards, but those cards don't really mean much if the other person isn't willing to take your calls because all you did was schmooze and move on. If you're already making an ask before the other person has a chance to breathe, you might be a networking jerk. Connecting is about finding out what the other person needs and how you can help. It doesn't have to be a huge thing, just something that benefits the person you're connecting with, he says. A successful connector knows there's more value in leaving an event with one new friend or acquaintance that you can develop a mutually beneficial relationship with than contact information for 50 people you didn't spend any time getting to know. In order to begin to see the world through a different lens, and hear it with a different ear, and analyze it with a different brain, you need to rethink the way you interact with everyone and everything in the world around you. How do you do this? Superconnectors have many attributes, but above all else, they must be in possession of one thing. Self-awareness. What makes me tick? Self-awareness is all about understanding your strengths and weaknesses, your thoughts and motivations, so you can live your best self. It means knowing what you're good at and what you are less than good at. Sometimes that means actually avoiding the things you're not good at rather than having to get better at them. It also allows you to understand how other people perceive you. And this is hugely important, both personally and professionally. Scott can speak to this from personal experience. As a student at New York University, he was one of six students selected to meet with a high-level Hollywood development executive. Scott's intent was to ask insightful, thoughtful questions. He knew that he didn't know very much about the process of how executives determined whether to greenlight or distribute a film. His idea was to listen and learn. Unfortunately, his plan was thwarted. As soon as they got into the room, another student whipped out the screenplay she'd written and began pitching the executive on why he should make it. The other students were horrified. The gall! So self-indulgent! She hijacked the conversation and made it all about her. The development executive was so taken aback that the rest of the meeting became useless. Had she had a fraction of self-awareness, she would have known that her behavior was unacceptable and would never allow for a meaningful relationship or connection to stem from such a meeting. But she had no clue. After the meeting, Scott asked her if she knew what she had done. "Yes," she replied. "I made an impression." She was right. She did make an impression, but not the kind she wanted to make. Her behavior was colossally unself-aware, but she had no idea. She thought she had clinched a job in Hollywood. This was the first time Scott had truly seen someone in action who entirely lacked self-awareness. It caused enormous damage with someone who could have been a game-changer. For superconnectors, self-awareness is also important because it plays a big role in the way others perceive you. And like it or not, the world is built on first impressions. People's perceptions of you, how much they remember or pay attention to you, whether they're engaged by you, whether they'll have another conversation or even want another conversation with you, what they'll tell others about you, and why they may seek you out in the future are all based on their initial encounter with you. Research backs this up. Amy Cuddy is a social psychologist at Harvard Business School and the author of the book Presence. She found that the strongest influences that we have on one another derive from a person's perceived warmth and competence, the operative word being perceived. Interestingly, it's warmth, not competence, that's more important when assessing another person. When we assess ourselves, however, we believe that competence is more important than warmth. Cuddy also found that power posing, say, putting your hands on your hips like Wonder Woman, and acting confidently, convey perceptions of competence. Obviously, being self-aware doesn't magically occur overnight. It's going to require you to understand the ways you shine and the ways you suck. You have to know your pitfalls and shortcomings. We're sure you don't have many, but we all have things we can work on. By becoming cognizant of your limitations, you can begin to define your purpose or vision. For example, most people can't talk about themselves in a very smart or interesting way. By smart, we mean the ability to understand and articulate goals and not just list their CV. You don't want to be known for just anything. You want to be known for something you care about and what you want others to care about. This is where thesis comes into play. More on that later. You want to understand the real value you have to offer instead of the value you think you need to deliver. Vanessa Van Edwards, an author and behavioral investigator, figures out what makes people tick in her behavioral research lab. So she knows a thing or two about human behavior. Most people think superconnectors are very good people, she says, but I think it's the opposite. The best superconnectors know themselves. It's not about knowing others. It's about knowing where you thrive, how you connect, your favorite conversation starter. The people who have studied themselves are the best connectors. She freely admits that she started her company because she is a recovering awkward person. Nor was she especially self-aware. Growing up, she focused on academics. She was comfortable in a classroom, but outside of class, not so much. When she was a junior in college, a professor told her to study people the way she would study math or science. "He told me to make flashcards," she says with a laugh. And so she did. "I made flashcards of conversation starters and then took notes," she says. "In that process, I was also figuring out myself. But I told myself, people are hard. You know yourself better than anyone. You have 19 years of experience in who Vanessa is. Focus on you first. When you're self-aware, you learn to play to your strengths and minimize or eliminate your weaknesses. This takes practice, of course. Dan Chabelle, for example, knows himself really well. He is an introvert. Big, noisy groups make him uncomfortable. He knew that he would have to compensate for his shortcomings. So he decided to hold small Friday night dinners for a handful of people. "I started a millennial dinner club where I meet with people once a month," he says. "That plays to my strengths. With 200 people, I'm not working the room. It's getting to know yourself." We advise people to take an inventory, as in, make a list, check it more than twice, and write down your answers on a piece of paper. When you're forced to write it down, you're forced to be truthful with yourself. This is for your eyes only, unless you want to share it with someone else. So we encourage you to be honest. By looking into yourself, you can determine what needs adjustment, what calls for just a little tweaking, and what works in your favor. Do you understand the concept of personal space? Do you exude confidence or arrogance? Are you a listener or a talker? Do your words carry weight or air? Are you a good public speaker or are you better online? Are you comfortable walking up to a stranger and striking up a conversation, or would that give you a panic attack? How do others really see you upon first contact? What sorts of things are you really bad at when it comes to meeting with people? Do you need help getting organized? Are you a good decision maker? Do you take time getting back to people? Do you hate conversations that aren't about your interests or matters of importance to you? Do you like small talk? Are you naturally inquisitive or close-minded? Have you ever changed your position on a deeply held belief? Do you lie? If so, why? Is it because you want to feel self-important or because you feel like you need to keep up and fit in? Finally, are you okay with what you've learned about yourself? Is there anything that bears correction? So, now what? We asked Darius Ferreau that very question. Ferreau, who is Dutch, studied marketing in college for about 6 years. The school system in the Netherlands is different from ours. "I was always an average kid," he says. "I didn't belong to the smartest people. I also wasn't part of the dumbest people." After, finally, graduating, he wondered what he should do next. He realized that he didn't know much of anything. So he went back to get a master's in business administration. And that's where his interest in productivity began. Because during that period, he was one productive dude. By the end of 2010, the same year he was writing his master's thesis, he and his father started a laundry technology company, creating software and automation for laundries that wash for hotels and hospitals. "I figured out that the power of productivity, and especially just knowing yourself, knowing what you're good at and knowing what you're bad at, basically determines the outcome of your life in terms of happiness, in terms of everything," he says. During that period, he also started researching everything that he writes about today on his blog, dariusferreau.com/self-awareness. And over the past 7 years, he has only gotten deeper into personal development and productivity. Productivity yields results, and results determine the outcome of your life, he says. The company was successful, but he decided he wanted some experience at a corporation. So in 2014, he got a job at Gartner, an IT research company, and worked in London for about a year and a half. He was miserable. Working for a corporation just wasn't his thing. His direct, open style of communication clashed with the culture. He didn't feel that he was making a difference. He wasn't happy or proud. So what happened? He thought of Aristotle, as one does, who noted, "Knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom." He took a step back and quit his job. He was going to focus on his strengths again, on entrepreneurship. That's when I really developed true self-awareness, he says. You hear the term pretty often, but how self-aware are you actually? The only way to answer that question for yourself is to look at your decisions. For example, do you base your decisions on your strengths, or do you just make decisions because everyone else is doing something? Thoreau often asks himself what he's good at and what he's bad at. If you don't take the time to think about knowing yourself and having self-awareness and developing that, then almost everything you do is just almost like gambling, right? He says. You just take opportunities. You make decisions. You do things without really thinking about them. And then you have to wait and see whether it makes you happy. We've done this ourselves, by the way. And what we learned has helped us immensely in our own lives. Scott, for example, often makes business decisions in the moment, but sometimes that has been a negative in his business and connector life. Earlier in his career, acting quickly on introducing people backfired. He skipped critical thinking steps that could have avoided burning bridges or turning people off. While he still makes business decisions daily, he rarely acts impulsively anymore. Ryan is a better listener than talker in group situations. This can be a strength and also a weakness, especially when more outgoing people are involved in a group conversation and his instinct is to take the back seat and let them tell their stories. It's great to be a good listener, but difficult for me to make an impression and drive the conversation in these situations, he says. To compensate, he often carves out one-on-one time with the people who matter to him. Sharing a cup of coffee at a cozy cafe is probably more valuable than an open bar at a group networking event. Chapter 3. What type of connector are you? Erica Dewan is an expert on collaboration who advises many leading brands and global organizations. She has degrees from MIT, Harvard, and Wharton. When she speaks, most people tend to listen. We certainly do. Dewan, the co-author of Get Big Things Done, The Power of Connectional Intelligence, realized that not only are people introverts and extroverts, but they also have different ways of connecting with other people. According to Dewan, there are three types of connectors: thinkers, enablers, connection executors. Thinkers are curious to the max. They have 100 ideas a minute. They're just not always the best at executing them. Enablers can assemble people together and share ideas with them. Enablers love to introduce people to one another. Connection executors are the accomplishers. They take other people's ideas and make them happen. You can have a lot of enablers coordinating, but if they're not bringing new ideas to the table, it doesn't get done effectively, she says. Or we'll go to a company and find that 90% of their executive team are thinkers. They're trying to launch more tech-savvy innovation, and they realize that no one is going to do it. So one of the first things we do is help people really understand what are the collaboration styles, what are the gaps and strengths, and how they design teams to more effectively leverage these styles. It's important to determine what type of connector you are so that you can figure out your strengths and weaknesses. If you don't understand your type, how are you supposed to find others who can help fill in the gaps where you have weaknesses? How do you know where to focus your energy? It gives a sense of the type of person you should partner with and making sure that they are someone who connects differently from them, says Dewan. This is something we did instinctively. Since Ryan is an introvert and Scott is an extrovert, we complement each other. The reason we like to reference Erica's work is because determining what type of connector you are is a great way to develop a stronger sense of self-awareness. You can home in on strategies that will work for you as a connector and avoid them, or find partners to fill in the gaps in all of the areas in which you're weak. You don't have to think of it as gospel, either. Remember, super connectors are great at learning from the people around them, as we are from our friend Erica, while at the same time making their own rules. If we were to categorize ourselves,